Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Imran Ahmed, founder and CEO of The Business of Fashion. Welcome to the BOF podcast. It's Friday, March 15th. Last year, when I visited Cairo, I happened upon a unique store concept called Maison 69, the brainchild of Amir Fayo, whose underlying philosophy is to create retail and hospitality concepts rooted in culture and connection. Everything starts by not thinking of himself as a retailer.
I don't do retail. I don't know how to do retail. Retail is structure. Retail is data. Retail is numbers. And unfortunately, I don't connect to any of these. I connect to people, to how they feel, what makes them tick, what makes them interested. And their emotional memory is very important to me. How people remember us, how people feel when they interact with us.
This week on the BOF podcast, I sit down with Amir to discuss his unique personal history, his innovative, emotive approach to retail, and the philosophy that underpins it. Here's Amir Fayo on the BOF podcast. Hello, Amir Fayo. Welcome to London.
Hello.
Thank you for joining me here in London for the BOF podcast. This conversation has been a long time coming because when I was in Egypt last year in Cairo, I had the pleasure of visiting Maison 69 and then doing a bit of research about you. And I thought, this guy would make for a very interesting BOF podcast one day. And here you are in the flesh. But before we talk about Maison 69, I want to go way back. Well, maybe not that far back, but
let's go way back.
Back in history. And just tell us a little bit about growing up. Where did you grow up? What were you like growing up? You have such an interesting, multifaceted way of describing your work. But I want to know, like, who was the young Amir?
Well, the only memory, I think it's an interesting memory, I was featured in the national newspaper of Bangor in Wales because I was the first kid to be born in that small little town with black hair. So that was my beginning.
Oh, wow. Okay, so how did your parents end up in Bangor?
My parents, they were studying at the University of Bangor. And that's how I happened to land in Bangor. And actually, I grew up the first 6 years of my life in Wales. That's how I started.
And your parents were from?
Both my parents are Egyptian.
Yeah.
Genetically, when I did the test, I
have a chunk. 23andMe.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that moment where everyone wants to know where they are, where they come from. Part of me is Greek. Part of me is Egyptian. Small part is Portuguese. I have no idea how that happened, but that's genetically what came up to me. But for sure, culturally, I'm Egyptian. Emotionally, British. Intellectually, a New Yorker.
Okay. We're going to get to the New Yorker bit in a moment. So when you move back to Egypt at the age of six, I'm assuming that's where you moved to?
We moved to London and then back to Egypt, yes.
So what was it like growing up in Egypt? Was this in the 1970s?
No, 80s.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, you know what's beautiful? I always share with my friends, Egypt gave me a heart. And the UK gave me my creativity.
Yeah.
And the US gave me my thinking process. Because I didn't have all of this combined in one go. I managed to build them as I go. So I'm always grateful to be Egyptian and to spend a good chunk of my life in Egypt because it nurtured me and it gave me another perspective of life. Coming from England and then moving to the US, they all have their different components that created who I am today.
So what do people need to know about growing up in a place like Egypt? You know, we have listeners in this of this podcast in like 170 countries. You know, many people listening will have never been to Egypt. And the first thing that comes to mind when they think about Egypt is the pyramids.
Yes.
But having recently just visited Egypt again after a long time, there's so much about Egypt that I was able to learn from my conversations with people. I'd love for you to relay some of that to our listeners.
You know, I think there is a power when you grow in a place that existed for 7,000 years. There is a power to that land. Whether you don't notice it, whether you don't know it, whether it becomes cliche, but in reality, it affects you. It creates a weight to who you are. It gives a sense to your being that creates something, whatever that is. But for sure, I felt it the most the more I lived with international communities, the more I lived with different cultures. I felt there is something in being Egyptian. There is a naivety to the world, in a sense of Egyptians are very generous. The culture is very welcoming. And when you go to the outside world, you realize that's not the basic where everyone starts. That makes people special to be that. And this is where I start to connect the dots. What did Egypt give me, or what the culture shaped me to who I am today?
That was very much my experience on this recent trip.
Oh, I'm happy to hear
Egypt.
That.
I mean, the people, wherever I went, even in when we went into old Cairo, people were coming up to me and commenting on what I wear, and they were inviting us into their shops and offering me coffee and tea. And you know why?
Because the intention is to connect.
Yeah.
The base intention is to connect.
On a human level.
On a human level.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
That's where they come from. It is that connection.
The other thing I took away from this trip, and by the way, thank you so much to Aya and Munaz from Octane for like being my tour guides on this trip because they really helped me. But was the kind of cultural role that Cairo specifically, but Egypt maybe more broadly, plays in the Middle East, historically and today. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think there is a power to Egypt, as I said. It's the beginning. It's the core. It's where it all begins. You know, I worked on a campaign for Egypt in 2010. Mm-hmm. And the campaign was to create a voice to Egypt, to the world. And the insight was where it all begins. This is really the story of Egypt. There is the source of everything. When you look around, it started somewhere there. And I think that's the role that Egypt played along the years. And I always say there is a power to Egypt. No one has invaded Egypt. Everyone came visited Egypt, but they didn't last long. And this is who we are. We're very hospitable when people come and visit, but you can't come and stay forever, in other words. So that's the role what Egypt plays. Egypt is the center of creativity, the center of culture. I mean, you have a generation 40% under the age of 25. So you can imagine the energy in the country and in the city. So for years, Egypt was labeled as the Hollywood of the Middle East.
Yeah, that's one of the things I took away from my trip is that when people in the broader region think about Egypt of that time, they think about all of the films and movie stars and culture that was kind of generated in this country.
And still is. Like the movie industry, I'm not part of it, but just by being an observer and witnessing it, it's one of the big voices in the Middle East. Hence, even the Egyptian accent. It is the most understood around the region because of the movies.
In the same way that everyone understands the American accent.
Exactly.
Wherever you go in the world, they speak with that accent. Yeah.
100%.
So in this culturally vibrant, ancient culture, what role does fashion play? What is the role of fashion in this interesting mix, in this ancient mix?
Actually, let's take a step back.
Yeah.
Pharaohs were about costumes.
Yeah.
Costumes defined their hierarchy, defined their power, defined their gender. So 7,000 years ago, they started communicating who they are through what they wear. So I believe it's in the DNA, the self-expression. But of course, over the years, culture changes. Over the years, the social economical changes. But I think Egypt now is living a great moment where people are celebrating its own talent again. There's that moment where people, and honestly, I don't think it's Egypt only, it's global.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. There's that celebration of the local identity. People, younger generations especially, love to connect to who they are, love to get to know who they are. And one of the touch points is what you wear. Where did you get it from? The story behind the maker. And this is a moment for sure. It's in the Middle East. We've seen it globally, but observing it even in Egypt recently, it has been, and I always share a story, the days of the Hard Rock Cafe is gone.
Yeah.
Nobody's interested in a franchisee concept anymore. They're still there. The mass loves them, needs them. But in reality, people are more attracted now to something close to home.
Yeah, and let's be honest, Hard Rock Cafe was basically a place to go buy a t-shirt that showed that you went to whatever city.
Yeah, great concept, great ideology, but it was as good for its own time. Today, and I think that's the energy of the younger audience, the energy of people in general. Even, I don't think even mentioning the younger is enough to give credit to actually, I think it's a general mood across generation. People now want to connect to who they are. People want to connect to someone who knows who they are. And that's a very tricky part because there's always a power that you can come from an outside environment, assuming that you know. Maybe you know, but not enough.
Okay, so back to the story of Amir Fayo.
Yes.
From Bangor to London to Cairo, you have made some really interesting choices in your life about like what to study and like take us through like your kind of professional journey now, like starting with like the things you chose to study up to the point of like how you describe the work that you do today. Because you're like one of those people I would call like some people call them slashies. Like you do so many different things. Other people might say you're like multifaceted. But you know, how did your education shape who you are? And how do you describe what you do today?
I'll go back to the word choices because I don't think I have choices. Or for me, it was a choice of something. Everything took me to another place. Things chose me. Honestly, I didn't choose things. I think the only thing I chose when I finished architecture, I knew I didn't want to be an architect. And I wanted to be in retail. That's, the, I think, the only moment in my life.
How did you know that?
During my summer holidays, I used to have summer jobs. And the summer jobs, at that time, I had only three choices. It's to do internship in design offices, architecture offices here in London, which obviously I didn't want to. Two is to work in retail stores. Three is to work in restaurants.
You just now said, obviously, I didn't want to. Why was it obvious?
Because I wasn't good.
Okay.
I wasn't good. I loved the discipline of architecture because of what it creates and experience to people. But building the walls was too restrictive for me.
So then the option two was the retail store.
Exactly.
And that was exciting because?
At that time, it was not exciting. At that time, it was, I want to be part of something.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do the internship, so I need another excuse. I don't want to be in a restaurant. So retail was the go-to. And at that time, when I used to go back home to Cairo in the summer holidays, my friends from Cairo would say, can you buy this t-shirt for us? Mm-hmm. Can you bring that pair of jeans for us? And then I realized they like my taste. They like what I do. And during 4 to 5 years in London, working every summer in a retail company from Benetton, I remember my first job was in Benetton 328 Oxford Street. I still remember.
You know, that store isn't even there anymore.
I know. It was next to Debenhams. It's not there anymore. And that was my beginning. To Emporio Armani, the one next to Harrods, to Valentino. I did that kind of narrative in retail. And then for me, it was very obvious. At the age of 20, I opened my first retail store.
Where was that?
In Cairo.
What was it called?
69.
Oh, wow. Yes. Okay. And why 69?
I wanted actually to call it Future Classics.
Yeah.
You know, coming from London, I had that creativity angle of playing on the old and the new. So I called it the Future Classics. And then a friend of mine, his older brother was in part of the conversation. He said, why do you want to call it Future Classics? Just say something fun, provoke people. I said, like what? He said, 69. And I was like, okay. And he thought I was joking. First day it became 69.
Okay. And what was the vision of that space and that store?
I was too young to understand even what the word vision means. At that time, all what I had is passion and an idea. And the idea for me was to bring a piece of Chelsea, a part of King's Road, to Cairo. That was as simple as a 20-year-old mind would think. So it was a very small store. I bought black and white photography, I remember, from Covent Garden, and I put it in that store. And I painted the store like the trend in London at that time, which the walls were all like washed, kind faded colors. And that was the beginning. People would come into the store and they say, oh my God, it feels like London. And in my mind, it was just the pictures and the paint.
And what was the best-selling item in that store?
Honestly, I was selling everything. Everything. It was a moment. It was 97. There was nothing much of a specialty store in Cairo at that time. And I was the first young, hip, new kind of brands and labels that's coming from London to Cairo every 2 to 3 weeks. So people were just absorbing anything.
And were you basically doing like suitcase import to sell stuff?
That's exactly. The best part of the story was not even that, because the scale of the business was growing quickly.
Yeah.
So I got introduced to all the British teachers that works in Cairo at different schools. And I would give them free tickets to go back holidays to London. And they bring me back the suitcases.
Filled with products from London.
Yes.
And you can't remember what was popular like at the time?
Honestly, the only thing I remember at that time, I can't remember the items, but what I remember is my inspiration process. I would go to Topshop, I would go to Top Man to see what's going on. And then I go to the wholesalers, which is literally 5 minutes away from Topshop and Top Man, at the back streets of Mortimer Street, that where the wholesalers area are.
Yeah.
And I do my selection and I ship it and everything sells. Repeat.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. And so that was your first retail store. What were the things you learned about what makes, because you basically built this incredible reputation and track record in innovative retail. What would you credit as what you've learned about what makes for a great retail experience from that store?
Big question. I think the first answer in my head, I don't do retail. I don't follow retail. I don't know how to do retail. Retail is structure. Retail is data. Retail is numbers. And unfortunately, I don't connect to any of these. I connect to people, to how they feel, what makes them tick, what makes them interested. And their emotional memory is very important to me. How people remember us, how people feel when they interact with us. You know, I built that process along the way. There is three topics or three pillars to how I approach any brand or any project, whether retail or not. The emotional memory of people, how to be part of that.
And when you say emotional memory, you mean how people remember the way they feel when they're interacting with
100%.
You.
People always remember how they felt.
Okay.
You know, nowadays you go to all these exhibitions they call experiential, immersive.
Yeah.
And you know what? You leave and you don't remember anything.
Right.
You remember that you went there, but you don't remember any feeling you really have.
So that's pillar one.
Pillar one. Pillar two is the social intimacy. I'm always interested and intrigued how strangers in a place can interact, because the default is people want to connect, but people are guarded. People have different perceptions of each other. How to approach space and to make people connect in a space? How can they interact? How can we create accidental meeting moments for them? So they can have a conversation. They can get to know one another without it being forced. The third part, which is extremely important, the beautiful mundane.
The beautiful mundane. Okay, what do you mean by that?
How you take something so mundane, for example, you know, when we started, we were trying to put off that sound in the room. It's a very mundane process. But guess what? It's a story. There was a feeling coming with that. There was the frustration. How can we get that off? How can we get someone to help us to do that? This is all our feelings that happened in less than a minute because of a very mundane thing. And I'm always interested in that.
And you want to find beauty in those mundane experiences.
I want to create beauty to them. I want to elevate them to be something that people remember, that people want to come back to it. Not coming to the thing they've never seen before. Coming back to what they know, but through a different eye, through a different feeling. Their association with it becomes interesting. So in whatever space, in whatever brand, in whatever retail concept, I follow these. And these are not the codes of retail. I don't follow signage. I don't follow directions. I follow discovery.
We'll be right back with more on the BOF podcast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? For me, I got a chef-grade range recently, and now I'm cooking new things every single night. Seriously, no cuisine is off limits. The point is, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. I can picture myself with a car full of groceries, cruising down the highway, soaking up the sun with the available dynamic Sky Panorama glass roof. Ah, pure bliss. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX. Luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
You know that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store, but did you know Shopify powers selling in person too? That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere, online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/BOF, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BOF to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/BOF.
So then this is a podcast called the Business of Fashion Podcast.
I know.
So there's the business side too. But so then in your experience, when you master those three pillars, does the business follow? Do the numbers follow? Does it work commercially? Because it's still a retail store.
It's
has
a business.
To work, right?
And you know, I learned it the hard way. Creativity needs money and money needs creativity. They both need to feed into each other. I think the power of what we were lucky to create, that we didn't follow the mold, but it worked for us.
So 69 worked.
69 worked. Yeah. We celebrated 25 years a year ago. That's how we opened Maison 69, the 40,000 square foot store.
Which is the one that I visited in Cairo last year.
Yes.
And I was kind of blown away by...
Why?
Well, the first place I walked into with your, by the way, incredibly lovely team who...
They are everything.
...convinced me that, you know, I should drive all the way to this place. And like, they really said, oh, you should. And they were so kind. And so I think it started with the welcome.
Yes.
That same feeling I had everywhere during my time in Egypt. Yeah. And then we walked into this incredible bakery, food store, something right on the side of the main
flower
entrance.
Flower shop.
And you know, so many people talk about the kind of hospitality elements of retail.
Yeah.
But I just remember walking in there and feeling like, wow, I wanted to...
You want to be part of.
I wanted to have the things in that place.
Yeah.
And I think there was like a lemonade or something that I had.
Sugar cane, maybe.
Yeah. And as we walked through the store, there was that large...
The steps
that went down. And again, there was a dining area at the top. And like, there was all these people sitting on those steps. And some people were working and some people were in conversation. And like, immediately there was this feeling of human activity. And then we walked through all of the different parts of the store and the changing rooms. And like, everything was something I couldn't expect. And so part of that was because I'd never been to the store before. But part of it was because it was a genuinely interesting experience. It was huge. It was sprawling. And, you know, having explored all of the different parts of Cairo by that point, I really understood, having, you know, spent a lot of time in developing countries, what it takes to pull something like that off in a place like Cairo. There were so many different things.
Beyond the ideas of right, beyond the ideas of wrong, there is a field. I will meet you there.
Which is that Rumi quote, right?
Exactly.
Can you say that again? So like, why was that quote so important to you?
Beyond the ideas of right, beyond the ideas of wrong, there is a field. I will meet you there. And this is usually the ideology I take when we design our own stores.
Okay.
So when we did this exercise 6 years ago, when we wanted to shift from the small scale stores to the bigger space ideologies that we create now, because I don't call them stores, honestly. I always say we're creating a hybrid environment that people can come and be part of. That's not language of retail. So when we started to define that code, I said, where is that space where there is no right and there is no wrong? It should be home. Home should be that space. And I said, we're going to design homes because homes should be welcoming. Homes should create belonging. Homes should create easy connections. And that's how we designed the store. The reason you see a flower shop in the beginning of the store, because a home is a garden. And that's how we designed the store. Every space of the store is to reflect a moment in the house conceptually and poetically. That's where the dining room is, because it's a representation of people getting together. And with that thought, I think there is something very powerful in the making of that store. Though honestly, I didn't want our conversation to be about that store, but I understand it's a big chunk of what came to the world in the last 2 years. We didn't want to work with a contractor. We didn't want to have a general contractor.
So how did you build and create that space?
Our intention, we knew we were going to spend a lot of money. And we want to make sure the money creates an impact on people. So our criteria was to find small workshops that has a maximum of 10 people, or owned by a single family. And then we got a project management to organize the relationship between all of those people. And everyone said, you guys are crazy because you're looking for the ones who are not going to stick to a time schedule. You're looking for the ones who are going to say with a big smile, I'm sorry, I'll fix it. So if you're ready for these two components in a project that huge, good luck. And I said, yes, because the tone of what we do, we love the beautiful imperfect. And with that intention, this is the magic you feel when you walk in this space. There's 432 artisanal people contributed to that space.
Okay. And of course, I did not know that. But I think this is a lesson that I've learned throughout my career, but also from a number of the conversations for this podcast, is that intention
exactly.
At the beginning of any project, whether it's a retail store, the creation of a business, the intention is so important.
Yes. And our intention is to create space for people to come and feel something. When the feeling happens, people will eat, people will drink, people will buy. The first intention was not for them to come and buy. The intention was them to trigger the kid in them, the sense of wonder, the sense of curiosity, you know? And it was very interesting for us while we were designing the process. I always say, let's go to the eye of a kid. You know, there is that twinkle. There is that blink.
Yeah, it's that, you use the word wonder right now.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know if that's an emotion or a feeling or what it is, but this being able to capture and create a sense of wonder, the kind of wonder that a child has when they see a giraffe for the first time, or when they swim in an ocean for the first time and they see the vastness of it. As we grow older, we can lose that sense of wonder.
And especially with what you see on your phone every 3 seconds now, the phone gives you that illusion that you see everything in the world now. And it was very important for us to create that feeling. When you walk in, you feel something.
Yeah.
And that something is very important to us because it's different to everyone. For some people, it's surprise.
Okay.
For some people, it's a connection and so on.
So this might seem like a super mundane, banal question, given what you've just said to me.
But guess what? I love the mundane.
Okay, that's right. So the beautiful mundane. So we live in a time now, Amir, where everything is available online. We experienced during the lockdowns a huge surge in e-commerce. Yeah. Retail stores around the world have suffered. And I use the word retail intentionally because I know that's very different from what you create with the intention that you have. But why do we still need these kinds of spaces today when everything is available at a click of a button?
Again, I would circle around the word need because I don't relate to that word.
You don't relate to many of the words I use.
No, I think I relate to who you are.
Yeah.
But you use the words that a lot of structured businesses use. And that's why you are in the business of fashion.
Yeah. So tell me about need. Yeah. So why don't you relate to that word?
I relate to love. Need comes with less. Need comes with fear. Love comes with abundance and more. So with that intention, I don't think people need anything anymore in today's world. But for sure, people would love to feel something.
So let me rephrase my question.
Yeah.
Why do people still love stores like Maison 69 today?
To feel something, to get excited, you know? There is always that notion that sometimes people miss. The beauty of retail, when people go in a fitting room and they stand in front of the mirror, that's the optimum of their truth. Without even realizing. It's at the moment they're looking in the mirror at themselves, trying to buy something, either to bring the best out of them or to make them someone else. So from the biggest moment of vulnerability in front of a mirror to the biggest moment of, I want the world to approve me the minute I leave that fitting room. So people would always love having a feeling or having a moment that make them feel something, whether connecting to who they are or maybe the potential of who they can be. That's why people will always love to be in spaces that creates a feeling for them. What I'm sure 100%, no one is interested anymore to be in a place where things are forced at you. Things that looking at you, telling you, buy me. That era for sure is gone.
Why?
Because the ideology of need is shifting. Did you need to do that podcast with me? No.
No.
Did you
I needed to for the schedule because we always want to have a weekly episode, but we don't choose things.
I'm sure I can be at the bottom of that list. The reason why I made it somewhere to the beginning of the list, because there was something there.
Yeah, there was.
That you felt.
I felt something. Your team told me a little bit about you. We met briefly at the BOF.
Good or bad?
Great.
You the know, bad like, is more fun.
I mean, they were very keen for us to meet, you know? And so I looked you up immediately and I noticed this kind of charisma and passion that you have. And that's the kind of person that I like to engage with.
And you know, I learned something. People can only see what they have. You can only see what you have within you. You can't see what you don't have. And that's what makes these conversations of value to people. people who would see value in this conversation, it's reflecting again of what they have inside. Maybe they cannot voice it, but when you hear the voice, it provokes something in you. And this is what we hope in doing any of these projects, that we provoke something. We evoke something. One of the biggest compliments I've ever heard in that store, I was standing in that store and a father came with his five-year-old kid. And he said, can you give me a tour to the store? Because I know you do it differently. I said, of course. He said, you know why I'm asking you? I said, why? He said, because that kid will know he deserves this.
Wow.
What this store represents in the city today is not store. It's you're telling people you deserve better. You deserve something else.
Explain the psychology behind that. What do you think he meant?
You know, one of the biggest compliments, or at least sounds like compliment in the beginning, people would walk in the stores, any of our stores, and they would say, oh my God, we don't believe we're in Egypt. And in the beginning, I was used to take it as a cool compliment. And then it started to offend me because I realized people are not expecting much from their own environment.
So it kind of raises the bar.
It told them, you can do it.
Yeah.
Because that was not a franchise. That was not an international brand. It was not designed by XYZ. It was not produced by XYZ. The claim to fame, everything happened within what's around you.
Which makes it even more impressive. So my question for you...
See, why are you even saying that?
Because everything came locally. And to be very honest, to get things done at that level...
That's the challenge. That's the emotional perception
that
people have, usually about developing markets. There is that sense. There is no capacity to go beyond.
It's not that there's no capacity. It's just that it doesn't happen in the same way.
In the same capacity, in the same grandiose.
Well, I just see like retail projects here, as you said here, they would be all planned out by the day. Everything would be, you know, that's why they call them a rollout.
But with all my respect to the beautiful work, what everyone does, a lot of work comes from a place of fear. It does not come from a place of abundance.
Yeah.
It comes from, will it succeed? It should work. We don't function that way.
And this is such an important lesson and one that I'm constantly trying to remind myself of and our team is like being fearless about the way you approach things. Like we can sit and try to imagine everything that can possibly go wrong.
Of course. And they do. But there's a beauty in that.
Yes.
When you own it, it becomes an added value.
Yeah. When you say, okay, all of these things can go wrong, but I'm still going to do it.
Yeah.
Because I believe in it. And actually, it goes back to the intention.
And you don't see the wrong.
Right.
A couple of days before the store opened, there was a big wall in the store made of small mosaic tiles. And the guy had an accident, who was working on it. He couldn't come. And it was a choice. Either we keep the wall as it is, or we'll figure it out. And you know, my team said, we can do it. I said, really? I said, let's do it. And I have these videos of 20 of us up till 4 in the morning, sticking the mosaics.
Wow.
And most of us never did it before. Does it look perfect? No. But the beauty of the outcome override the imperfection of it. So,
and the beauty of that experience for your team in having come together.
Belonging.
That is the big thing. We have this thing at BOF called the Voices Test because we do this conference every year called BOF Voices. And the first year we did it, we had no idea the scale and the complexity of what we were trying to do.
But that's the beauty of ignorance.
Yeah, because you'll try. I mean, even BOF, like I would never have tried BOF if I knew what I was getting into. But when you have moments like that out of naivety, when you take something on, amazing things can happen. And yes, it can be a lot of hard work, but it's so much more satisfying.
I always share that. I'm very grateful to my creator that kept that naivety of a kid within me, because that actually what allows me to do what I do.
Yeah,
that I go with such a naivety that I don't see the dark part of the story. And when we see the dark part, it becomes the light part.
Well, absolutely. And I think anyone who's an entrepreneur whether that be in your field or another, you have to be optimistic. Because if you're a pessimist,
it's your only tool.
Yeah, you can't get around the fact that everything that could possibly go wrong.
And it will go wrong.
And things will go wrong. Like you would never build a store that no one's ever seen in Egypt before if you thought about everything that could go wrong. People would never do that. Because you can't get your head out of that stuff.
No, I think no one will ever jump into having seven businesses under one roof. This place is a bakery, is a restaurant, is a bookshop, is an art gallery, is a photography gallery, is an event space, and happen to have retail for menswear and womenswear collections on top of that. And how the logistics of how this works and how they flow from the central kitchen to the bakers that start at 4 o'clock in the morning, and how these logistics, if anyone told me about these logistics, would have never done it. But the intention of making it happen so it becomes a platform for people to be part of something bigger than what they've experienced before is what makes it work.
Exactly. So I think of you as like a philosopher. you're like a retail philosopher. I know you don't like that word retail, but like for people listening, who are looking for their own path to find what they love, to develop their own philosophy, to find that feeling of connection with their work like you seem to have. What do you advise?
Funny enough, I don't think I have anything extra than anyone. The only difference, I only kept what we all have at a very young age. I decided not to add much to it. I kept the naivety, I kept the ignorance, I kept the wonder of a kid. You know, when you're a kid, you look for the danger and you want to be part of, not knowing it's dangerous. So I believe I have nothing special than anyone. I have exactly what everyone have when they came to this life. I only decided to stay at that place. I decided not to learn, not to be educated in any of the normal channels of education. Everything I do, I did not study. I did not study marketing, I did not study branding, I did not study space design, I did not study communication. I didn't study any of this. And everything I do and every penny I make, even with my agency in New York City, everything I offer through that agency, I didn't study. So my only tool was to ask questions. My only tool was to wonder. My only tool was to be honest and wish I become a tool of success for any of the clients I work with. That's usually my intention whenever I get a new client, whether it is the public hotel in New York City or a small store in Abu Dhabi, the intention is the same. I even made that kind of prayer with my team in New York. Whenever we get a new client, we say, God makes us a tool for their success.
Well, on that note, Amir, thank you for your time.
Thanks a lot.
I was not expecting that conversation. I don't know what I was expecting, but it was...
It's a pleasure to be here.
Beautiful. Thank you
so much. I always appreciate the recognition. I always appreciate that you didn't see what we do, you saw through what we do. And that's more important to us. Thank you.
Thank you. The BOF podcast is edited and produced by Emma Clark, Olivia Davies, and Eric Bria.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.